The customer journey is important, but really the customer profile, which is understanding your avatar, your customer, what they look like, what do they buy, where do they shop. And the good part is, in this day and age, we can find out all that information. I used to pride myself on, I could sell ice to an Eskimo. It was the stupidest thing that I would say. It was because I could not identify who my target customer was. Well, people like me, so those are my customers, and that's such a waste of time because then you realize they don't even have the budget.
When I met you in 2020, you were not like, I grind at all terms. You've been mindful of your wellness for a while.
There was a point where I resented the lot that I had in life at that moment. Learning who I was besides mother and business owner or mother and student, that time was so necessary because I learned to love myself.
Well, everybody, welcome back to Success Rewritten. I'm your host, Emily Lomenzo Washkovic. And today I have a dear friend with me, Zenaida Mann. And Zenaida, we met in 2020. It has been 5 years, but I'm so excited that you are on the show. I'll let you tell people about yourself in a minute, but I just want people to know you are just this bubbly, enthusiastic, and very well accomplished woman who helps small business owners. You help nonprofits. You're in the education sector. And you also just really are a network queen. I never have had a time where we've connected and you've not said, oh, I think this person, or have you checked out this? And I'm so grateful for you coming on the show and being here today. So thank you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. This is an honor. Thank you.
And Entrepreneur Magazine, Top 100 Women of Impact.
Yes. Thank you.
I should say that as well. You are just amazing. So for those who don't know you or haven't met you, give us the story. Who is Zenaida?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for that beautiful intro. I am happy to be here. I am Zenaida, or Z. You know, you all my friends now that you're listening to this. I am a human. I'm human at its core. And I'm a lover of people and things in progress. And in short, I run a marketing agency called Zenaida Enterprises. No surprise there. And I've been in this industry for about 17 years. I am a former educator. I am still an educator. And I'm someone really that likes to see more than ordinary marketing in the world. I have more than ordinary impact to communities that we serve, whether you are a big brand or you're a nonprofit. I just want, you know, we need to see something a little bit different in how we influence others. And marketing is a big influencer, advertising, as you know, all of this stuff. And the driver of that in my agency and strategy is what I do at the core of my work.
And something I love the most about your agency and the work you do is you really help brands and businesses figure out how to tell their story authentically. And I think so many businesses struggle with that. Like, they could tell you or me, but they don't know how to share that story across different forms of media. Can you just share a little bit about some of the tips or advice that you give to help business owners and nonprofits better tell their story as a form of marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that question. I will say this may be something that people do not want to hear, but you need to let the practitioners do the work, right? And I hear you. Might be some DIY. I can do it myself. I'm a solopreneur. I get it. I started the same way. But what I will say is if you have, and not even if you have, if you're able to bring on someone who knows these things, who's passionate about storytelling, we don't have your story as practitioners, but you can share your passion, share what the product is about, the service, whatever it is that you do, and let someone else who knows how to use all the tactics create these stories for it. But if you are a DIY person and you want to know some tips on how you can do it, is really just think about your origin story, getting to your business and why you started. I think it's very important. You know, I always share that I started in marketing. I don't have a degree in marketing. I have 3 degrees and none of them are in marketing or public relations. And, you know, I argue against you don't really need it. You know, we can all learn the skills. However, I just know that I had a gift the first time I was on a call in customer service. I was doing a customer service job. Shout out Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I was talking to someone, and she had said that she wrote a book, et cetera. And she's just like, you know, Twitter just came out. It was very new. And she's like, I don't know Twitter. And she's like, you think you can help me? I mean, it went from a work call to all of a sudden we were just talking about business, and I was already interested in it. And she said, I need someone to help me, but I don't understand these things. So I told her, oh, we'll talk offline. And we did. And I ultimately realized that I love trying to figure out how to put 140 characters, I think it was, into one line, you know, one line that empowered people to take an action, which was buy her book. And then all of a sudden I said, I love this. And I started there. So that's a part of my origin story, really just jumping on an opportunity that presented itself, and I found my passion there. So I would say, one, identify your origin story. Just sit down and think about it. Why did you start? Why did you do what you were? Why are you doing what you're doing now? The second thing is, like, look around. I think it's really important to look at your competitors, or you may not even know they're your competitors, but look at other people in the industry and what they're doing and see the way they tell their story. Like, what is it that they're doing? How are they telling it? Maybe you want something different. I always say more than ordinary. You know, we have to do more than ordinary. I got the, you know, what can we say that differentiates you? But just got to think about that. So when you do eventually bring on somebody to do your brand, your rebrand or brand development, they can have something as a basis to know you, opposed to them telling you what you should say about your brand. So yeah, that's, I can go, I have tons of tips, but
no,
you know,
that was great. And I mean, this show isn't all about business tips, but I have these very successful entrepreneurs on. So like, of course we have to hit on some of this stuff. And one other thing I want to hit on in the industry before we kind of go back to more of your journey is identifying your ideal customer is also something that you and I have bonded over so much in the content that we used to make together at Yelp. And I feel like for so many businesses, they want to be something to many people. And you can. I'm not saying that you can't have a wide variety of identity when it comes to who your customer is. But I do feel like there's this unlock in successful and effective marketing when you're thinking of who your ideal end user is. So like, is it male or female? Is it a certain age range? Is it a certain demographic of location that they live in? Like, there's all these factors of an ideal customer, and then you can continue to connect your story to why they are the ideal customer. And I feel like that's something you have really excelled in terms of helping your clients unlock that.
Oh, yeah. I think the customer journey is important, right? And just one, the customer journey, but really the customer profile, which is, there's a lot of words for that, but understanding your avatar, your customer, who your customer, as you're saying, what they look like, what do they buy, where do they shop? And the good part is in this day and age, we can find out all that information simply. I remember, now I'm going back to the old book, but I had to run the New York Public Library to do research on this very information, to have somebody teach me how to research people and their, you know, their habits, especially the online stuff. Like, what are they doing? But now, oh my goodness, you can ask, you know, an AI or something, and then tell them, well, where did you get the info? And boom, it's there. And you make up this profile, you know, and I think that part is very important, or you're going to waste time. There was a point in my life where I would say, when I first started the business, it wasn't Zenata Enterprises then, but when I was doing the hustling and the side projects, I used to pride myself on, I could sell ice to an Eskimo. It was the stupidest thing that I would say. And I was just like, for some, you know what? Honestly, it was because I could not identify who my target customer was. I didn't know how to do it. And so I just knew that I was really good with people across generations, identities. It didn't matter. You put me into any room, I'm going to like, I could figure it out and people will like me. So I would take, well, people like me, so those are my customers. Let me sell to anyone who liked me. That's what it felt like. And that's such a waste of time, because then you realize they don't even have the budget. They don't have the budget. And maybe you're pricing too high for this person. So you have to identify your core, that avatar. I mean, there's so many words, but whatever word it is, just know who your target customer is and really just do some research. Because if it's someone of a, let's say, a lower socioeconomic class, but you're trying to sell a $3,000 course to them. They're not buying, and now you're wasting a lot of time. So who is it? Or is it someone who buys luxury? They may not be rich, but they buy luxury hair products or something. But you know that about them. And that's so if you're looking for business ideas or whatever. So yes, know the customer, do the research. And it's so easy now to figure out your, I mean, Meta makes it easy, but you know, that's.
I was going to say, you just gave me a really good idea for any small business. It's like, go to ChatGPT or whatever you use and put in there, who is the target customer for, and then put your business and give them your website, give them your social and let it tell you and see, am I doing a good job speaking to and defining my target customer? Because they might point out a target customer that's spot on with what you're going for, or it could be really different. And then you might know what to do. And, you know, if it's different, ask it, like, where did you gather that information from? You know, keep going and kind of figure out what the root of whatever it's pulling from is. But I think that's a really good exercise that you could probably just set a little timer on your phone for 15, 20 minutes, talk to an AI model, see what it says, and then you can come back to it. Like, this is not something that you're going to just change overnight, but I do think it's a progressive part of becoming a marketer as a business owner is really thinking about who am I talking to?
That's right. And thank you for that. I do want to add one, I'll try to make this part quick, but I think also in just to the flip side of that, sometimes people may identify a certain demographic as not being that they would be able to afford this or would even be willing to pay for it. And we know, for example, the Magic Johnson theaters a long time ago, right? They wanted, I believe it was Oakland. They wanted to put a theater in Oakland. It may be Oakland, but I know it was one of the areas in California. And the thing was, oh, Black people don't buy movie tickets. And it was just like, oh, they're not going to go to the movie theater. And I wonder if that came from the Howard Schultz book, the former CEO of Starbucks. I believe he talked about that in the book. I'm going to look that up, but I believe that's where I got that from. And he said that no one thought that people would buy these movie tickets, right? Oh no, you know, we think about bootleg videotapes and all that stuff. Oh no, they're not buying. And it became one of the highest selling theaters, I believe, in that geographic area. So sometimes, and I'm just doing that, you may want to pressure test this notion of maybe you think you want your ideal customer to be X, whatever that person in avatar is, but you don't think, or maybe the AI told you, no, really, it's going to be this demographic who probably works in corporate and maybe it's not. So you may be okay with starting something new, right? Or saying, maybe I'm selling to this person, but sell to them differently, right? Just thinking about that. So don't be afraid. So I know I'm giving two different answers, but don't be afraid to say, well, I'm because you might be passionate. Let's say for me, I'm very passionate about educators, right? However, they would not be the ones to buy my current service offerings with Zenata Enterprises. I'm not saying they don't have a use for it, but that they just don't, right? Like, what would they hire me for except for like personal branding? However, my services, they wouldn't. But if I wanted to empower them as, and we'll talk a little bit more about what I'm doing now with the business, corporate influencing or educational influencers, right? If you want to be the person that builds up your brand and you want to create a side business hustle, whatever it is, you might want to talk to me. And even if it's a consulting, you know, maybe a coaching call or something where I can tell you, well, hey, here's how you're going to brand yourself as an educator. And then you can do this. And maybe they want to start a business. So I just created that market. Now it may be a different pricing. It's a different way of how I'm going to talk to them, but it's possible. So I do want to say that both are possible, but go research it. It'll tell you right there who you should be marketing to.
And it's good to think about different demos that you could appeal to, right? That maybe you hadn't originally thought of. So I love that idea of like, that's just an exploratory starting point. It's not how you should define like who your business is for. And that's the end of the conversation. So I'm really glad that you shared that. And I also think depending on the industry and the offering and all of that, how you build that customer is different. Cause like with the movie theater example, you made me think of fitness businesses that are brick and mortar and how there's like a like rim of how far someone's willing to go to work out. And it's not that far. Like people don't want to travel that far. And so sometimes you have to look at that. Like, and I think that's why it tied back to the Starbucks thing a little bit with location, if I'm remembering right. Like, the demographic that they were saying didn't buy the tickets. It's like, well, they didn't have close access that was like affordable, showing things they were interested in. So it was the like merging of all of that. So I'm really glad that you hit on that. That's a super important point.
So I think that's definitely where I got it from. That's why I'm like, I think that's why he told that story, because they were talking about Starbucks in certain communities. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Now you're refreshing my memory more.
There are certain things you can do to change behavior or like be the first, but there are certain things that like are going to impact it. Like if it's a cup of coffee, how far am I really going to go to get a cup of coffee? Right.
Right. Right.
That's really good. I'm glad that you shared that. Okay. Let's get back to your personal journey. So,
okay.
You started in education, like you were a teacher.
I'm still a teacher, but you know, I'm not formally in the classroom day to day, but yes, New York City, shout out to New York City Public Schools. It used to be New York City Department of Education. They rebranded. And so, yeah, I that was pure passion. I didn't care about pay or, and don't get me, listeners, don't get upset when I say I didn't care about pay. I got paid, obviously, but it was a childhood dream that I pushed to the side. I was influenced by teachers, actually, educators, who I loved dearly, especially my middle school teachers. But they told me, they said, you're too talented and too smart, which I didn't like. I didn't like that. But that's because they were disgruntled. They didn't like teaching anymore. They had been teaching for 20 something years and they just wanted to retire. And that's the truth of it. Not all teachers are that way, but that's what it was. And they're just like, Zenaida, no, get into something else, go into law, do this. And I'm like, okay, one time. And it was so crazy, but the teacher showed me a copy of her pay stub and the seventh grade. And I had this big thing because every Saturday morning, I always tell the story. I lined up all my stuffed animals and my dolls and I played school. Everything I learned in that week, I brought home and I taught the dolls. I wanted to teach so bad. However, fast forward seventh grade, my teacher at the time, I won't name her name, but shout out to her in Staten Island. she showed me her pay stub and she said, this is what you get paid. I have no context because I'm in seventh grade. Whatever age I was, 11, I don't know, whatever grade, whatever age. And I didn't know. I saw a comma. It looked like a lot of money to me. And she's just like, they don't pay you anything. That was her point of view. And I took that in my head because I said, you know what? I didn't grow up with money. I didn't, you know, I whatever. And I was just like, well, I don't want to be poor. That's what I was thinking. I don't want to be poor. So maybe I just don't teach. And I buried that. And it wasn't until I was 28, 29 years old that I saw an advertisement for New York City Teaching Fellow. Shout out to them. It's a wonderful, wonderful program. And it said, you know, career changers. Now, at this point, I had already had my bachelor's. I have a degree in accounting and I was just finishing my political science degree and I was going to law school. Oh, so glad I didn't do that. But anyway, I was going to go to law school and because I would probably wouldn't been miserable, whatever, unless I did public service. I don't know. But anyway, I digress. Like that's where I would have been. I really would have been broke. Like, no. Anyway. And so I saw that and I said, you know, I'm tired of this work that I'm doing. The day to day, it's very boring. It didn't change. I was working at an accounting firm off and on. And I was like, oh, God, this is not me. And so I said, I'm just going to do it. And the significant part about that is they make it where you can work and get paid. So while you're in school, so it's not like you're in school getting your master's for 2 years and you're not getting paid. You are working inside the classrooms. And so I worked in the classroom right away while I was in my program. So I taught and I loved it. I fell in love with it. I started in special education. Absolutely love it. Still love it. Miss it to this day. And yeah, so I did that for almost nearly six years. And then COVID hit. So I've had my business, as you can hear the journey, I've always been in this marketing business. But there's a lot of dips. There's a lot of financial stuff. I need to make money. And if you're not making money, the first thing you think is I got to hurry up and get a job. And that's, so I dip in and out of my agency doing that. But when COVID happened, something shifted in me and I decided to just go full on with this business. But yes, I taught for nearly 6 years. I'm glad. I always say that at least at the end of my life, I never have to have a regret of not becoming an educator.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know so many people that's just like, I wish I would have went to medical school. I don't ever have to wish. I satisfied that.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you did that. And I think sometimes, like, I would love to teach, but to go back to like school and become licensed or qualified, that sounds like a lot. So it's cool that there was that program where you could like get started and get like addicted. I love that. I think that's a good idea.
Oh, it's a fantastic idea. I went through New York City Teaching Fellows. I got my master's from LIU Brooklyn. It was just one. I'm so glad that I did that. It was hard because I'm teaching. I'm a mother. And then I'm doing night classes. It was brutal. But oh man, I loved it. There is something about if you give your career life to education, you're a special person because it takes you, it's literally lives in front of you. And a lot of them are coming in there and they're just doe-eyed and they're just like, okay, what are we learning? And then there's the tough side. And even that, which I thought was the highlight of my career in education.
You were probably the best at that, at the hard stuff.
I should say that. I'm going to pat myself and say that. I never usually do. But I have students and they're all grownups now where they find me on social media because my first name, if you type in my first name, you're going to find me.
Yeah, you can find you.
They find me, but they tell me all they're doing in their life. Even those, because in special ed, I worked with a very challenging population. One half was students with autism, which was beautiful. And the other side was kids who didn't have the greatest life at that moment for whatever reasons. Now, it doesn't mean their parents were bad. Maybe they just, life happens. And now they're sitting in my classroom with all that's happened in their life. And we're putting textbooks in front of them. And they just needed somebody to be there for them. They needed that beautiful third space outside of everything else that they have to know that they're safe, that they're cared for. And then maybe Miss Mann want to teach you something, right? It's kind of like, let me get in.
And that they're worth something.
And they're worth something.
I think teachers, I mean that, and I'm so fortunate that I grew up feeling that way at home and with my family. I have a huge extended family. So I got that a lot of places, but I still had so many teachers that like influenced what I thought I could do in the world. And I still think about certain teachers of mine. And we were just saying at dinner, me and some girlfriends the other night, we've been out of high school 19 years. So for me to still remember certain teachers from even elementary, middle, high school, that's really the impact that teachers have. And I know for so many kids, they don't get that other places. And so that makes school and teachers so important and so valuable.
They're so important. But I will say as an important note, when that passion, because you need more than passion. You need to be skilled, which I was. But when you feel that the passion is gone, or maybe not the passion is gone, but you may resent the system that you are teaching in because you know something's going to work for a student, but maybe the district or whatever. If you have to know that if you're not coming to school with that same energy, that same fire, that same drive, then maybe it's time to step away and you might come back. I'm still fully licensed. I'm a tenured, highly effective teacher. There are no terrible marks on my record. And if I want to go back, I'll go back. But I did hit a moment where it was just like, I'm working with some of the most needy population and they get the least amount of what they, what do they call it in psychology? Cognitive dissonance. That's what it felt like. It felt like I was walking into something that I know we could do better, we should do better, but I can't. And then I'm acting like, oh no, it's just normal. And that got to my heart where I was just like, yep, and it was COVID. And so everyone was virtual. So it's time for me to
change in the tides. Yeah. Yeah.
Time for me to walk away. And it's fine because then I started to contract and work with them in my own way. So I'm still involved. I mean, that's the good part.
I love that. I love that. Okay.
I dragged that out. I'm sorry, but.
No, yeah. And I think that's a good call out for anyone, educators especially, but anyone doing any job. I mean, there are these different emotional things that we come up against at work, whether it's like not being able to fully be ourselves or whatever is going on outside of work, in work. And if you are aware of that shift and you can do something to effectively get out of it and change that outcome for yourself, it doesn't mean that you're saying screw that place. Like, it really is about taking care of yourself. And I think there's a trickle down effect of that too, right? Like, you now are showing up in different and arguably more impactful ways because you're doing a different role. And that was a period and a chapter. And now you're in another chapter.
And I feel the same way. Another note, I feel the same way about the medical field too. You know, we see it online. It's like, oh, my nurse was so rude, or, you know, the CNA didn't help me. And honestly, whatever it is, and I'm sure it's not the patients, it's because you are overworked or whatever, then it's okay if you can, or make a plan. I have a lot of entrepreneurs that come to me, or pre-entrepreneurship come to me and say, I know I'm empowered, I'm educated, I'm this, I'm that, and I'm ready to leave my job, but I can't because of obviously financial things, like whatever. Then make a plan and say, you know what? 6 months, and this is how much I need, and then I can make a natural, you know, move out. But I don't think that anyone should stick into something that they are no longer into. It doesn't have to be passion, but you're just not into it. Or find, which is what I've been doing with my own agency, find something else to be excited and hopeful for within. Either create it or build some relationships with leaders. Maybe you want to get into education tech. Maybe you want to, like, you can find, if you don't want to leave the industry, but just, you know, don't stick, because it's, besides you being impacted, people around you are being impacted.
Right. Well, and there's also an element of, like, you know, you might not be able to quit right now. So what can you do to get yourself back to a better place, whether that's like stealing more time for yourself, setting better boundaries? Like, you know, there's things that you can do in the short term to make your day to day more livable, and like awareness that you're having a hard time. And even being able to say that to someone else, a coworker, a partner, whatever, can sometimes really be valuable. So I'm glad we talked about that. I forget sometimes that you have an adult daughter, but then I remember the first time you told me that, and I was like, wait a second. First of all, you do not look like you could have an adult child, but I also feel like that's a big part of your story and like what motivated you through different phases. Do you want to talk about how that's had an impact?
We absolutely can. And I will, full disclosure, I remember when I was younger, if you asked me this question when I was 25, I'm 42. So if you asked me when I was 25, I would have said, hell no. I would have said, we're not getting into that, because the judgmental aspect of, you know, me growing a business, going to school, doing all these things. And then people, this is all in my head though. No one's ever, not true. I've had some people look at me and go, right? But for the most part in my head, I kept on saying, if someone knows certain life aspects about something that I don't carry that now, but if you have that, you're going to judge me that maybe I don't make the best decisions, or maybe I didn't, like, I didn't want to be judged based off of my younger self. And so, yeah, we absolutely can. At this point, I'm a grown woman. She's a grown woman. And I have the best family. I love my daughters. I'm a girl mom of three. So it's like, yes, let's go into it.
Okay, amazing. So we don't need to talk about the first daughter like the whole time, but you were young. There was like so much going on for you. Do you remember what you felt like? Like, did you feel like, I've got this, I'm going to figure it out? What was that like?
I was driven. I had really good parental figures. My grandparents raised me, and military family. I watched them struggle, you know, and they made it work. I don't know how they made it work. They made it work. And they were also community leaders. A lot of in the community that I grew up in, my grandfather was one of the male figures there, because there weren't many father figures in the community. So I saw that. And then I saw how my grandmother made things work. So when this did happen, you know, my grandparents at the time had passed away, and I became, and what we're talking about is, you know, formally being a teenage mom. I'm 42. I'm not a teenage mom anymore, but formally a teenage mom. I wasn't scared. I was dealing with a lot of grief. So what I will say is, I wanted my daughter. I had lost my mother figure and my father figure, and somehow in my brain, it translated to you need a child to take care of. And so I felt blessed. I don't think it was the greatest decision for a young person, but it was my decision that happened and I chose it. However, I was very empowered, but I was very scared because I knew there's a lot of judgment. I always knew there was a lot of judgment behind that. I had not planned this in a way where it's like, oh, when I get 16, I'm going to be a teenage mom. It happened. But then I said, okay, well, I'm going to own this and we're going to do life together until she now, what I can't believe is that we're talking about the fact that she's 26 right now and moved out. She has her own life. And I'm just like, every time she picks me up in a car and drives me somewhere, I'm like, it really just, wow. Cause and you know, it was hard. It was really, but I felt I was determined. You weren't, and I don't think this way anymore, but back then I remember saying, you're not going to make me your stereotype. I will not be your stereotype. And that meant that I overworked myself. Hence why I have two degrees before I hit 26, 25. I just, with a child, and I was just driving straight through. I'm going to do it. A college of Staten Island, shout out to CUNY. They can say when I was getting my bachelor's degree, I had to get academic approval because I tried to take 30 credits in one semester. That's how fast I was doing things. And they approved 28, I believe. Like they were like, how are you going to do this? How? And I said, watch me. And I did it. But that's the type of thing I did for 20 something years. So I was doing.
You were grinding so hard.
Yeah. At the detriment of my health. As I got older, I was, you know, became anemic. I was tired all the time. Like my 30s was hard. And then I was studying for the master's. So I do remember that. But I remember being like the warrior woman, which I know we don't celebrate that as much anymore. Or the superwoman, if we're talking about the tropes of women and the tropes of Black women, is like, oh, I was a superwoman. I felt like I had to be, or I wouldn't be here today. And it was hard, but the girl's 26 years old and she moved and she just moved like 3 weeks ago. I'm having such life shifts where I'm like,
it's nuts.
Yeah. So anyway, I hope I answered that question, but yeah, it's nuts.
You totally did. And you know, I've done a couple of things with you in the past where we've been talking about your Black identity and how that's played a role. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but tell me if this resonates. Even if you hadn't had a teen pregnancy and had a daughter young, you have to work way harder in the world to get further. And so getting multiple degrees and doing that, I feel like that was also just a badge of honor that you were capable, right? And that people should look at you like you're capable and educated.
Yes. And especially knowing the communities that I grew up in, there weren't many that I knew of. Maybe there were, I don't know. So I felt like I had a duty to my community as well, right? Besides the outside gaze, it was more or less my inner community. What is Anita going to do? Who is she going to be? Is she going to graduate from high school? Will she go to college? And doing those things, I think, have empowered people within my community to say, okay. And then even more so having the child is just like, man, it's funny because the girls, I've always been like this girls empowerment person. I had a grassroots nonprofit when I was 19. I'm talking lugging around this baby as a teenager. And I'm over here teaching branding workshops and how to do things at 19 in New York City Housing Authority, like just going in there and negotiating. Can I get 2 hours for free in your community center? And I'm just in there, bring all the girls and we're, you know, teaching and learning. But just also understanding like, yeah, I had to. I literally had to because people, or at least I thought that's what was happening, that people were just like, oh, she got a baby. She ain't going to do nothing. But, you know, the stereotype. And I said, no, I had to. But it's unfortunate because what I will say is even for the things that I've done on the grassroots nonprofit level and stuff like that and the volunteering work, I always say, like, who would I be if I didn't feel like I had to carry all of this? And I don't know. And that's where I'm at now at 42, trying to learn this part of, okay, I've done this. I've been in a classroom. I've helped kids learn how to read. I've gotten some kids to college. It's just like, My 26-year-old, she's living her life. My 20-year-old living her life. I have one more little kid and she's 12 and she's thriving. And I'm just like, okay, well, who am I? And how do we fix up, you know, how do we fix ourselves from not taking care of ourselves on that, the wellness side and then the grinding side. And now I'm here. That's where I find myself. But I feel like it's unfortunate. I think it's very unfair. I feel like I can't be basic, which is just like, but I want to be basic sometimes. Like let me tell you something. I reconnected with someone who, I mean, we were like networking many years ago. And this guy, I somehow finds me on social and he says to me, oh, hey, how you been? I said, oh, I've been great. How are you? And his response to me is, oh, you're quite the celebrity now. And I'm like, what the heck am I projecting that people, I haven't heard from this man in 10 years. What made him say that? So I'm still thinking, it was just a few days ago. I'm going, what the hell am I doing? That he's like, I see you're still out there hustling and working. You're quite the celebrity. And I'm going, no, I am working, but I'm trying not to have that persona, but it's still there.
Okay. I don't know this particular human. So they could be interpreting that as just like seeing you speak at Luminary. Like you share your story in a way that influences people. And I mean, I guess first of all, before we move on to where I think this comes from for you, which is the community roots, I need to first validate the fact that, like, you know, you're saying a little bit that you were assuming that people thought this stuff and maybe they didn't. I don't think everyone thought that, but I don't think that was in your head. I think we need to really, like, call out the fact that a teen pregnancy, I think, race aside, people have a lot of opinions about that. But I also do think as a Black woman, that is a stereotype. And there is all of this energy that comes from all types of different communities, right? People that are close to you and people that don't know you and have never met you and know nothing about you. And so I just want to validate that I don't think you were assuming that. I think that was probably being shown to you in different places. And the fact that you have accomplished all that you have has helped so many other people, I'm sure, whether that was their journey or just a part of their journey, right? And I think that's why it's so powerful and impactful when people like you are willing and open to share, because you're like surviving and grinding and just doing your thing every day. But there's all these people questioning their own worth in the world. And by you just saying, like, you know, I'm here, I'm surviving, how can I help you? This is what I've been through. I think it motivates people for many different reasons. And so I'm just grateful to you for sharing. And I also want you to know that, like, you being out there and doing that stuff and some people thinking you're like doing it, I think you've slowed down. Like, I don't think you carry that same energy, because when I met you in 2020, you were not like, I grind at all terms. I mean, you were a hustler, but you weren't like, I'm not sleeping because I need to work. Like, I've always known you to be very mindful about that. So you've been mindful of your wellness for a while, I would say, since it was really bad. Can you just talk maybe a little about that, what that journey's looked like?
Oh, that's good. That's good. Thank you so much. I'm trying to think, where did it, you know, I think it kind of started with the anemia. I've had chronic anemia for it feels like decades. It feels like probably ever since I started my, you know, my period. It was just like, it was very heavy, you know, and you know, all the things with that. But I didn't realize, and now I do. When you're a kid, you have all these cells, everything's great. It's you're vibrant, there's oxygen, there's all these things. But the decades of not sleeping, in my 20s, I'm telling you, I had she was my friend, but we made her she was like my assistant. You know, it made me sound like, oh, we're doing great work, I got an assistant. But my friend assistant, shout out to Kalima, I'm sending this to everyone. Anyway, I would say to her maybe two or three times a day, can you go to Starbucks and get a triple shot vanilla latte? Grande, triple shot. And this was my 20s.
Girl, were we living the same 20s? I was sleeping like 4 hours a night. If I was getting 5 hours, I was like, yeah, I got a ton of sleep last night. And I didn't feel that tired, probably because I was drinking coffee from like 6 a.m. to 2 p.m.
That's right. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was able to get through the work. But you got to understand what you do in these moments incrementally, they add up. And then that one, gradually, you're just like, I am not well. And that's where my journey started. I had my third daughter, the 12-year-old. And so even before then, I was always reading books. I have like pharmacy, all these books. I love supplements. I love nutrition. And I'm reading all of these things. And I was just like, yeah, I have to heal myself because I'm not feeling well. It almost felt like gasping for air sometimes. It was a weird feeling. And then I started going to the doctor more regularly and learned that, hey, your iron numbers are here or your hemoglobin's here. And I'm just like, this isn't good because it's telling me that I'm not giving my blood cell, they're not getting oxygen. And I'm like, oh, that's why I feel this way. And so that journey started that way where I started getting dizzy and all these things. And I wanted change because I want to live as long as possible and not, and I know sometimes I sacrifice what we call beauty for that, right? Where it's just like, you know, everybody wants to look beautiful on the outside. I don't really, it's not that I don't care and that's great, but I'm just like, how am I functioning? Like, I want to be able to take my suitcase and put it up without hearing snap, crackle, pop. I don't want to like, you know what I mean? And what do I have to do to get that optimal health? And a lot of that stuff was stop drinking these triple shot lattes, get some sleep, start supplementing if you need to, right? Obviously ask your doctor, you don't want to just randomly do that. And it started there. But then the other side was, there was a piece between my two older daughters who have the same, came from the same relationship, and my current relationship and my current little one, where I was alone. So I was like the single mother and you're like, whatever. But I was alone. I spent a lot of time in intentional isolation where besides just the work, I was able to either go to a retreat, learn, you know, get in some grass and just kind of like lay there and look at the clouds. That was a part of my health healing journey as well. Learning who it was that I was besides mother and business owner or mother and student. And that time, I mean, that time was so necessary because I learned to love myself. I think there was a point where I resented. I don't think I hated myself. I think I resented the lot that I had in life at that moment. And it was just like, I'm going to hustle like this. Even now I think about it. I'm not hustling like this in 70. No, I'm not. If it's just like bread and butter and tuna fish, just so I can live the life that I want to live, then it is what it is. If I got the backpack, one of my really good mentors, she is this wonderful yoga guru backpacker. She's like 70. And this woman, when I tell you the smallest of resources and she lives a great life, that's the journey that I've been chasing. So that journey was just identifying who it was that I am. What am I willing? What can I let go? And then also, what are the tools and the resources? And for me, it was, I wasn't a big gym rat. At some point I did become one, but then it just became like, how am I feeling when I get up? Can I move fast? I had said this on a panel recently where I was just like, every morning I'm up at 4:30 a.m. I'm up 4:30 a.m. and sometimes I sit there like today. I had to sit there for about an hour only because the change in the weather. I'm in New York. So the change in the weather, it went from 80 to now we're at 40 and gloomy and plus daylight savings. My body's not feeling awesome. And so I said, well, instead of going to have my coffee and get on the laptop, I need to sit here. And I sat there in the dark until, you know, it started to sunrise. And then I felt okay. And I was like, okay, I'm into it. And then other days I'm grinding. So I had to learn that about myself because I had been conditioned to keep pushing and keep doing because I felt that I had to. And so it takes a little while, maybe not 10 years or 10 years plus, but it takes an intentional pause. I think that's the first thing that I had to do. And then really just get into those numbers. Please get your blood work done. Like that was the first. That helped me. That set it off because now I'm like, oh, all these red, all I seen was like red, which meant deficient. And I'm going, no. What do I need to cut out? And that's, yeah.
I love
some
that.
Really long responses.
No, you took me through everything talk, I was y'all. Hoping you would share. No, that was perfect. I have to ask you before we talk a little bit about the nutrition stuff. Do you have any advice for how to get better sleep health? Because I take medication for bipolar disorder that like helps me sleep. But for people who would like to sleep longer or better, like, what do you do? Do you do anything special? I think a big part of it is having like a sleep routine.
Yeah. You did. You took my answer. It's okay. You want to create and beyond routine, you want to create a sleep environment. That is so important. So everyone who knows me knows that I don't have a television in my room. There is no television. And before I met my current husband, there were no televisions in my house. And so, yeah, so I will say for the last decade, now I've had a TV in my house, but my two older girls will tell you, there's no TV in our home. And they're just like, what? Right. And so I'm big on books. You come to my house, there's books everywhere. Right. However, the bedroom, there cannot be a television. So I would say create an environment that you love. But I want to say for those who do like TV, because my daughter, you can learn from your kids. My older daughter has to, for her, she needs a TV in the room because she likes those YouTube, you know, the water, like it plays water sounds. She likes that. So she puts it on. It's very aesthetic and she has the low lights and it helps her drift off to sleep. All of this to say, create an environment that makes you feel comfortable. And if you feel unsteady, think maybe you're like, I can't sleep with a light. But if you're sleeping with a light, maybe turn it off and just see how well you sleep. I know there's some people that don't like apps and stuff on or the phones on their body or watches. I like to sometimes. I'll wear the watch and I have, oh, you have that ring. Oh, I like the ring. I'm thinking about getting that because I don't like the feel of the watch, but I like to track my deep sleep.
You need one.
I like that.
Aura Ring is an investment. Aura Ring is an expensive version. There's other, like, you know, more affordable versions. The reason I like Aura Ring so much is I really only care about the sleep, but because I wear it all the time, it gathers and gives you more like information based on your data. So like the sleep.
So it's like the health app?
Yes.
Does it put everything to the health app?
Oh, well, it I like can that. Connect to that. Yeah, yeah. They also have their own app though. So like every morning, actually today was interesting. I first woke up at like 5:50. My husband was getting up and I was thinking like, I could get up, but I don't like need to. Like I wasn't in a rush. So I checked my sleep score. I think I was at a 77, which is really low for me. That's bad. And I went back to sleep and I slept for like another 70, 75 minutes and I was up to an 87. So like sometimes looking at that helps me. And even sometimes if I wake up and I feel like, oh, I didn't sleep that good and I'll check and it's like a 92, I'm like, oh yeah. Like it changes
That's right.
the whole
now
way
I, can
I feel.
Over. I love it. Yeah. I love it. But I must say we got to get you a sponsorship with them. Cause look, do you see the nail color and the ring color? That is gorgeous.
I've been trying to get their CEO on the show. He does like podcast stuff. So fingers crossed, we'll see if I can get them on. But yeah, I mean, I would love if they.
You might have to find out who his assistant is.
Well, I know some Yelpers who know people who now work at Aura. So I'm working my threads. I'm working my strings.
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, I love that ring. Now I have to look at it. That's
yeah,
nice.
I'll send you like what the metrics look like on the back end. Okay. I want to talk now about like current day, because I feel like you, from a health perspective, have a pretty good like regiment system, set of boundaries. Do you mind sharing whatever you're comfortable in terms of like what you do on a regular basis, what you do if you need to reset or things feel a little bit off?
Yeah, well, I won't lead with that. Well, this is what I'll say. I practice yoga. I love yoga. Love, love, love yoga. And all types of yoga. So, you know, the one that helps me with rest is yin yoga. And that practice used to be every Sunday with my yoga guru friend, but she has moved to San Francisco. So I don't do that. And I'm have to fill up my Sunday with something else, maybe walking. I love to walk. So a lot of yoga. And in case I know people talk about yoga as, and sometimes it feels like a trend, which I don't necessarily like about yoga, what has happened to the marketing behind it, at least in Western culture. Yoga, I used it to calm my nervous system. And so if we're talking about all of the stories, everything I just shared, my nervous system was out of whack. And I would just get anxiety for no reason, even doing something like this. I'd be like, oh my God, I got to prepare and I'm shaking and I feel it jumps. I don't feel any of that. I feel very calm. And it's one to you. I mean, you're awesome. But the other side is like, I now know how to regulate my breath work and my breathing through breath work. And that came through yoga, because you are in a structured setting where someone is telling you to consciously breathe. I can't believe in my 20s, I used to hold my breath. Like even when I would wear an outfit and I'm just kind of like, to stand up tall, I would hold my breath for a minute. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Right. At the same time, my anemia is going like, I mean, my blood level, so yoga helps, because now I can slow down and breathe. And one thing that I notice, a part of this routine, is whenever something stressful comes up, automatically my body goes into let's breathe. Let's deeply breathe. I mean, all of a sudden my chest will rise and fall. So yes, that's a part of my routine. I do yoga 1, 2, 3, 4, was 5, but now 4 times a week. I have 3 practitioners. Let me tell you the hack. I go to a YMCA, so it's very cheap. It's not, and I'm not going to Equinox or something. I love Equinox, but I'm not doing all those, I'm not paying per class. I have my membership. And they have wonderful, depending on where you live, they have wonderful experts who have probably been doing this for 20 years, and they're going there teaching you for free. Well, within your membership. So I do that. I walk. I have a hiking group in New York in the Hudson Valley. And so we just went hiking yesterday in Indian Hill, which we got lost, which is good for the brain. Because then I was just like, it was supposed to be 2 miles and it ended up being 5. And we were like, I had no more water. I was just like, what are we doing? This can't be the first hike of the year that we're doing. Anyway, so I hike.
But that's so fun. And to do it with a group, like there's something about that.
Which came out of the why. It came out of the why. Because at the end, the yoga class, we would instead, because yoga, unless you have somewhere to go. And usually I always try to make my meetings later. The yoga classes are in the morning and later. So we would just sit there after Shavasana. We don't want to move. And all of a sudden, we all start talking about our lives. And a lot of the women are retired. And so I'm just sitting here as the young one. Finally, I'm like the young one in the group. I'm like, oh, that's nice. But anyway, we're sitting around and someone's like, oh, there's a trail. You want to hike? Like, I happen to live in the Mid-Hudson Valley, which is New York City has its places too. But let's just go out for a walk. And next thing you know, we started a group chat. And now we're up to 18 members of all walks of life, and they've all careers. We just added she was a former occupational therapist who just retired. So like it's beautiful. And so now I create the social part, which I'll switch to, is you have to have community. Community is important. And community can be you and one person. So you don't need 18 or 19. We didn't have that. It was 2 people walking on a trail. And now they told someone, I told someone, and we all just kind of, and it's growing. And so you need community. And I think and travel. I purposeful travel. So I travel a lot intentionally. I travel. Yeah. That was the last 4 or 5 years. I made like, I have to. And what I usually do is I try to build a small business community or network in the area if I can. Some places it's just not there. And I kind of make it work and play. So like I will go out for the day, but then I'm doing work. I might go to a networking event, but I love to travel. And it's really because I really do love people. And I want to study birds. I love birds, study birds. But the other side is I'm interested in small businesses across the world and just like how they do that. I travel. One of my trips was a policy trip to Cuba. I went to Cuba in 2024. And I went there and I interviewed all the small business owners. It was amazing, right? Because they can't make...
That sounds so cool.
And they can't make profit because of the type of government they have. So there's no profit. So
interesting.
Exactly. And I won't blow up how they make profit, but they can't make profit, but they have businesses. And it was just like mind-boggling. Like, oh, but how do you still thrive in this type of community and just learning from all of the amazing Cubans out there who I was just like, wow, I'm I mean, designers, everything. It was just wonderful. So I like that aspect. And it all helps me to ground myself back to it's not just work. I had a really pivotal experience when I worked at Blue Cross Blue Shield. Sarah's 20. So I'm going to say this was 20 years ago. And they closed. It had merged to WellPoint. You know, health insurance companies merge all the time. But they had closed the 15 Metro Tech office in Brooklyn, New York. They closed. We're talking about hundreds of jobs. So we had all, which will go into how I actually started the business. Besides that one call, I took my severance package and started the business. I was like, I'm not hustling back to another job. So I started the business that way. But anyway, I digress. I had a conversation with a woman who she was there at with Blue Cross Blue Shield for, I don't know, let's say 30 years. I don't know, whatever. It was a big number. It was her one and only job. They gave her a plaque. Yeah. They gave her a plaque and it said, you know, for your service. And she was retiring before they laid us all off. And I remember we were in the lunchroom and I said, oh my God, that must be so amazing. You're going to retire. What are you going to do with your life? And she said, I don't know. And it was so sad because she said, you know, her husband passed. She never traveled the world. She's like 80. That's what she was saying. She's like, my life, it's not over, but that was her mindset and her point of view based on her perspective. She said, my life is over. And all they gave me was a plaque. And I remember saying, I don't ever want to be that woman that at the end, and she's not at her end of a life, but she's like 80 and she's like 70, 80. And she's like, this is the end of my life. She didn't see any other future for herself. And she's dedicated so much time to a company that gave her a plaque. They gave her a plaque. It was gold, you know, whatever.
Oh,
and she's like, I have no idea.
It was gold. Who cares?
It was gold. I remember the gold trim. Oh, I remember the whole thing. I think her name was Mary. I'm trying to remember. And I remember her saying, my husband died. I think she either didn't have kids, something like she literally was like, my life is over. And I remember saying, that will not be me. And I used that my whole life. I'm just like my whole life after that, I was just like, that will not be me. And so a part of my self-care is making sure that, yes, I have to pay the bills. But I think we all, if you have a job, we all kind of make enough. If we kind of, sometimes we got to cut out the things. It depends, right? Like there's some money you can figure it out until you get to your next step. But I refuse to, I can't sacrifice my life in that way. And so my self-care comes first now, not being a hypocrite comes now. But travel, I have to see the world. I have to, even if it's a fraction of it.
I think that empowers people and builds confidence too. Like even just going on a little day trip by yourself and going and doing stuff like that's good for us as people. It really is. And I mean, I've kind of been realizing how much time I spent virtually talking to people with my job. And now it's like, I sometimes need to create that for myself throughout the week, like go do something. And, you know, sometimes I can meet up with friends or whatever, but sometimes it's just like going to get a coffee or bringing a book somewhere and like interacting with someone when I check out or, you know what I mean? Like there's this element of just go and interact with people or volunteer or, you know, do something that gives you an opportunity to interact with other people. It doesn't just have to be like friends or people that you know, but having that like grounding, I think can be so good for people.
Well, I'm reading a book right now. It's actually not like a big prose or anything like that, but it's called 1,000 Ways to Slow Down. I don't know. I think I picked it up in like TJ Maxx or Marshalls or something like that. And it's 1,000 ways. And it's just like one liners. Like you could do this, you can do that. And the real key is slow down. You know what? I appreciate the younger generation now. And everybody's saying such things about this Gen Alpha, Gen Z. But you know what? The one thing that they taught us is that they are going to live their lives. They're teaching us that they're going to live their lives fully without regret. And they're going to do what they want to do. And now they have the tools and the things that they can make money without the 9-to-5, which is a big issue for the workplace, right? It's like, ooh, these kids don't want to work. And it's not that they don't want to work. They don't want to work for you and all your keeping them in the office for 20 hours. And like, they're not with it. And I think they're showing us that it's okay to slow down and prioritize yourself in that way. And it's not, yeah, it's nothing wrong. A lot of it is just slowing down. You just got to slow down.
I love that. Okay, we have spent so much time together already.
No, it's me. It's my fault.
No, this, you hit on so many things that were like exactly in line with what I was hoping for. But let's just like give people all of the current day things. Like, where can they find you? What type of stuff can they partner with you on? Like, give me all the goods for anyone who wants to know more about you and your work and everything you have going on right now.
Thank you for that opportunity. Thank you for the opportunity to do that. So if you are a brand or you work at a company and you're looking for anything of the sorts of multicultural marketing, product marketing, CPG marketing, or nonprofit, and you need a strategic counsel on like what to do with your brand or how to get more eyes on your brand, please reach out to me. My website is zenataman.com and all social is Zenata. So as long as you got my first name, you will find everything you need to find. And then LinkedIn. I loved LinkedIn. So if you want to connect professionally, I will accept. I am not one of those. I've been on LinkedIn. I feel like I'm an early adopter. I'm not someone who says, I don't know this person. I connect with everyone. And, you know, I think it's important that it expands the 6 degrees of separation, right? Like we can, you know, learn and grow from each other or just kind of like look at someone's content. So yes, follow me there. But I'm very excited about this. I'm in a growth phase of the agency. I've always been on the agency side. I've always been on the, you know, subcontracting side, but I'm very excited to, make the everyday expert, you know, and you may not think you're an expert if you're like, oh, I just kind of have a 9-to-5 and maybe I'm a senior leader, but you are an expert. You're an expert in your industry, in your field. And anyone with 10 plus years experience, I am very excited to be developing work, coursework and counseling and just everything with helping them own their brand and who they are. And you may not want to be an entrepreneur, but you can be a corporate influencer, which I'm very excited by. I talked about that with the Shorty Awards, which I'm a judge for the Shorty Awards. And I wrote a great article about corporate influencing. But I want you all to know that you can have a part in a creator economy. And that's what I'm building now to teach you how to play in that game, because it's billions of dollars available for influencers. Again, you may not consider yourself an influencer, but you are. You are an influencer. You're influencer plus. And that's my new line of work. And so it's very new, but I'm getting comfortable saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. Mainly because people always ask me, how did you build your brand? How do you work with these different brands? How do you do this? And so now I am turning that into something that you can purchase and work with me on and do it yourself, you know?
Well, I'm going to be one of the first customers. I need this too. So this is amazing timing. I'm so glad you're doing this.
Do you know that the influencer marketing industry, it's billions and billions of dollars. And you know what? It's not just Gen Z. That's the problem. A lot of us think it's just Gen Z. Well, you know what? Let's say, I don't know, I'm just going to throw them out there. Maybe AARP needs influencers.
Right. And they don't need Gen Z. 19. Right? Well, and the thing I always used to tell people at Yelp is like, there's influencers with hundreds of thousands or millions of followers with no traction. And then there's influencers with smaller but very sticky audiences. And that's where I think a lot of opportunity is for not only you to help people become the influencer of their sphere, but that those are the better influencers for brands and products and all that, because they're actually talking to an audience about something authentic and real and aligned with, you know, what they do. So I'm so excited for you.
They know their community.
Yeah.
They know their community. There are so many micro influencers. That's what we call them, right? They're micro influencers. Anybody, it could be anyone from, even if you have 500, it doesn't matter. You may be able, it depends on what it is, a local business. Like even the local businesses, you can see this with food influencing, right? It can be someone who's in the, let's say, Brooklyn area. They have, I don't know, let's say they have 700 followers, but they're in the community. They're visiting your place. And now you got 700 people potentially coming to your restaurant. So there is, but that the side of that is there is no one, at least I don't think, anyone educating that side of how to become, right? Because if you go to an influencer marketing agency, they're going to say to you, well, where's your brand? Or where's your follow? What's your metrics? And we're, we're just working a 9-to-5 right now, right? But we're thinking on how we can get these brand deals. And so there needs to be a pool of educators. And in short, what it is that I'm building is a creator ecosystem for entrepreneurs or pre-entrepreneurs and corporate professionals into the influencer space. So I will say that one of the most exciting parts about this year is I'm going to the, I want to make sure I say this right, Cannes Festival. I think it's the Cannes Festival. I was accepted into their creator builder ecosystem program that they have. Something told me just to apply because I said, that's what I'm doing. I'm building an ecosystem. And they said they reviewed my whole application and they said, we would love to welcome you there. I've never been. This is a new, you know, it's happening in June in France. I'm like, oh, okay, so this is the start of it.
This is amazing.
Yeah. And I also want to say, you have to be open. So in this point of my life, I've done so much, but it's not that I want more. I want diversity in the work that I do. And this is the first start of it. And I would just love to bring everyone along. Like, I'm building out the cohort now of just people who are within the community that are getting information. And we're being real scrappy. Let me tell you, we're being scrappy with it. It's like we have a spreadsheet of, hey, they're looking for influencers that have, you only need up to 500 followers, just that. And you may, even if you get paid $100 for it, it's like, but now you are building it up, right? And so I want to teach people how to do that. And that's how I productize myself, right? Because people always want to know, like, oh, we want you. And it's just like, hey, you don't need me to do all the wonderful things that you may need me as a guy. But if you think about it, Emily, this is the educator part in me. So on the other side, it's like, I miss teaching people.
I'm so excited about this. This is like,
I digress, but I'm like excited about
that. It's the perfect next chapter for you. And
oh, thank you for saying that.
I mean, it brings everything together, like all of your passions and skills, and it's very exciting. I also feel like there are so many people out there who, like you said, they're already embodying this, but they don't know how to make it a thing. And you have such good skills, not only with people and marketing and social, but just the way to energize people too, which I think for so many, they need to learn the tactics, but they also need to feel the confidence. And I'm just so grateful that you're doing this. I think it's going to help so many people. And oh, it's awesome. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you so much. And this is the second time I've announced this publicly. So I am, you know, when they say build publicly, but you're like so scared, but I'm, hey, this is what I'm doing. Whatever. Because they have these things for Gen Z. They have a lot of that for Gen Z, those creator ecosystems. But if you tried to bring, I always say, if I try to bring my old self in that ecosystem, looking at me like, no. We don't do the elder millennial. Like,
but
we don't work
with
them.
Think about the fact that, like, elder millennials, like, that's who we want to follow and be influenced by. Like, I'm not looking to Gen Z for what outfits I should be wearing. So I think it's so, like, there's this huge web that you can help that's like way bigger than that younger generation pod. I mean, sure, they're going to have money soon, but we still hold a lot of the wealth and decision-making powers in our generation, you know?
That's right. I believe they say we are the direct inheritors of, like, the boomers, maybe, like, the transfer of wealth is coming to us. Like, I don't have anybody transferring wealth to me, but I'm just saying, like, I don't have my great granddaddy ain't sending me nothing. But if you think about it, when they talk about this great transfer wealth, it is us of this demographic, this age, that's receiving this. And, you know, and so there we go. Like, these kids are getting their money their way, but at the same, these young adults, let me say that, kids, young adults, but we are inheriting, if we're fortunate enough to inherit, we are all getting access to resources because of the people that came before us. And Gen Z will have their time when that comes. But it's just like, what are we, you know, we can,
well, and it's
we can
all about
capitalize
pieces
on things
of pie,
too.
I think, right? Yes. I mean, like, you're not even really competing with them in terms of if you're becoming known in your field, your lane, your whatever. So the people you're helping will all have their own like angle on it. But I think it's amazing that someone like you is going to put together the resources. I keep saying for them, but for us, because I'm right there. I need to be in the launch cohort. I need to be in.
I'm telling you, it's going to be, and here's the thing. We find that there are bad actors in this field that use people. I will rest assured that I am someone who's passionate and I nurture the communities that I build. And so that's the part that I'm really excited by, because I'm like, you can trust this, because this is something, as I say with my own brand, the branding I teach is the branding I use to get to where I'm at now. Is it the only answer? No, but it is the thing that I have literal fact proof that it works. And it's a template. It's a template that can be followed. But anyway.
No, don't say anyway. You have been dropping so much value. But I want people to remember ZenaidaMan.com. That's the first place to go for everything. But I'll link stuff in the show notes that we talked about. And when this program specifically, like if it has a landing page, we'll make sure we get that included. But I am so grateful for you coming on today. Is there anything that you wanted to say or share that I didn't give you a chance to?
Yeah, I want to say thank you for what you're doing. I think it's beautiful. I'm so glad to know you. And I'm looking for your journey, your next chapter journey and what you're doing now. And then for everyone that's listening, I think it's important to understand you can pivot when you want. If you have entrepreneurs listening to the show, I also want to say, you know, in this current moment, it's hard as far as like finances and some people are struggling. Some people are not. Some people are in the middle. It's okay as an entrepreneur to go. I just had to tell somebody this the other day. It's okay to go do subcontracts. It's okay to work on small projects, anything that's going to, you know, it's okay. And define your own success. Define your own pathway to that success. And don't be afraid and try to get out your head a little bit, because sometimes you might tell you that something isn't great and it could be. And I'm someone, even with what I just said about what it is that I'm building out, I've convinced myself a couple of times that why would anybody need this? And then when I wrote that article about corporate influencing, to this day, the Shorty Award still tells me that is our most viewed article. Well, people are interested and they're because they believe they can. And I want you just to believe you can. That is my last message. Believe you can. I can. You can. And we're going to make it all happen.
Thank you so much for coming on. I know these listeners are going to love it. No doubt.
I hope so. Connect with me, please.
Yes, I will send everyone. And LinkedIn, I mean, that really is a place where you're active and you are so accessible. Like, that's another thing I want people to know is you can reach out and you can actually become a client of hers and work with her. And yeah, I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Much love.